Welcome to Trailblazers, where we explore the inspiring journeys of entrepreneurs and industry leaders who are redefining success and making a lasting impact. These game changers are driving progress in our region and around the world. I'm Melody Bradford, your host. Welcome to Trailblazers. I'm your host, Melody Bradford, and today I'm joined by Ray Bridgman, Executive Director of the Bar Association of Lehigh County. Ray's career path has taken him through hospitality, banking, public relations, and entrepreneurship, all before stepping into a leadership at one of the region's key professional associations. He's also the co-creator of Network Magazine, the co-founder of Bridgman Strategic Concepts, and the driving force behind the Do It for Dom Focus Foundation, which continues to make a powerful difference in the fight against cancer. Today, we'll explore his leadership journey, his vision for the Bar Association and beyond, the pivots that defined his career, and the mission that fuels his nonprofit work. Ray, welcome to Trailblazers.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. So let's talk a little bit about why the Bar Association. What drew you to accept the role of executive director back in 2012? And what about its mission resonated with you, especially after your time in banking and hospitality?
Well, the Bar Association kind of came at the right time. I was in banking at the time. I became a regular sponsor and networking at the Bar Association. Mm-hmm. For those that have been in the banking world with the late, great Chuck Wyman, we would be at regular events. And probably back in May of 2021, we were breaking down after an event we sponsored. I knew something was going on because the boardroom doors were closed and there was some hush-hush meeting going on. And the previous director, Dan LeBert, who I knew pretty well, came out after that meeting and said, "Hey, just FYI, I just let them know I'm going to be leaving, and I floated your name for it."
Oh,
and I
wow.
said, "What? Why would you float my name?" And he goes, "I just think you'd be a good fit." And the first thing in my mind is, do I really want to work for 700 attorneys? And I'm like, oh, boy. So after some interviews and some research, it really ended up being the perfect career path for me as my next step. It brought everything into play, hospitality, business, customer service. So it was kind of being in the right place at the right time. And before that, it was funny because in banking, it was at a time where it was high pressure, a lot of stress, trying to balance family life. I'm at the doctor's. My doctor's like, "What are you doing? Your blood pressure's out of whack. You're Uh-oh. Overweight." And I'm thinking, you got to make a change. And this just came at the right time. It was like a gift. And it's been over a decade plus now.
Now, for the listeners that don't know exactly what the Bar Association does and what you do, I mean, obviously it's a consortium of, attorneys and judges. I mean, we were, at the Bench Bar Conference recently here. Tell me a little bit about what they do and how they service that subset.
Sure. The easiest way to explain a bar association is it's a chamber of commerce for attorneys.
Okay.
We provide member events, member benefits. We help the members obtain their continuing legal education credits. An attorney has to hit certain minimum credits a year. So we have a great, great program for that. I would put our seminars up against any bar association, big or small, really quality. That's how we handle our members. Again, if you think your local chamber of commerce, think about that and everything that goes along with it. Mm-hmm. We also provide for the community. We have what's called a lawyer referral service. Most bar associations do. It's specifically designed for a referral to an attorney. Mm-hmm. So you call in, you need an attorney, you pay a small fee, we vet your case, match it up with that attorney, and then you have a consultation with that attorney. Now, that allows us to serve a sector of the community that sometimes is lower income and help them research, where they need to go with that particular case. You don't have to be lower income to come through that program, but it does serve that sector.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have what's called a modest means program that actually allows the lower income population to get some discount legal
representation,
depending on how it's structured. So
okay.
that's bar associations in a nutshell, but it is a member organization.
Okay. And you're specifically Lehigh County, but there's one in every county?
Every county.
Okay.
And typically there's usually one in every county in the country.
Okay.
It's just different states have them structured differently, but here in PA, it's countywide, and yeah, it's been a fun ride ever since.
So let's talk a little bit about, I mean, you came from the hospitality, banking, and PR sector, so to speak. How would you describe your leadership style today and how it's evolved since your early roles to now leading the Bar Association and other ventures, which we'll get into in a second?
Leadership, well, everything I learned in hospitality first was kind of what not to do in leadership roles, because that sector is kind of helter-skelter. You're so high pressure, so stressed.
Mm-hmm. Very service-related.
Yeah, very service-related.
Yeah.
Now, it really depends on which job I'm doing at the time is what my leadership strategy is. At the Bar Association, I'm really blessed to have a great, great staff. I don't have to micromanage. It's more of a 30,000-foot kind of look, you know, manage the staff. If they need anything, I'm there.
And how big is the staff?
We're about five core staff members, counting me. With something like Network Magazine, that's a true partnership with Chris Morganelli. We build off each other's strengths and fill in the gaps there. With Bridgman Strategic Concepts with my wife, that role is a little different. You know, you learn you can't always be the alpha in the room when you're in a business with your wife.
Particularly with your wife.
But then when you observe her in action and you see the kind of dedication she has to the senior market and things like that, you quickly look and say, okay, I don't need to be the big dog in the room. She's got this. And my role has turned into a business development officer. Go find the business, let the expert handle it. She truly is the expert.
She really is a powerhouse. Miriam's great.
She is. Yeah. And she didn't pay me to say that, so there you go. With Do It For Dom, it's a little bit of kind of like you're the dishwasher, you're the cook, you're the waiter, you're the bartender sometimes. Although the family's there to support, Miriam helps a lot. My stepdaughter does a lot. Kate does a lot of marketing and social media for us. Danica, my daughter, and Devin, my son, are at the events. You'll see us all kind of filling roles there. So again, leadership depends on the day, depends on the job.
Yeah, absolutely. Which of your early roles, hospitality or banking or whatever, ended up teaching you the toughest lesson? Or maybe it's, you know, right now within the, you know, the Bar Association. Which of those taught you the toughest lesson that you carry today?
I would have to say hospitality, in that business is so demanding and the burnout rate is so high that if you don't figure it out early, whether you're the owner or the manager, you're doomed to fail. And you really have got to figure out a way to balance all that with chaos going on. If you've never been in the middle of a dinner rush and your chef walks out or your dishwasher quits. So you learn very quickly, figure it out before the problem happens. And that was an early lesson I learned coming up.
Not every leader has to come up against something like that, but things can get escalated and heated quite quickly in that industry. So that's an interesting point.
Yeah, especially when you throw in alcohol in the middle of it and some of your customers are not all together with it at that point. Yeah, it's very challenging.
Yeah. Since you came on board at the Bar Association or, you know, in your other work, in the other roles that you serve right now, what do you think has been, under your leadership, the most meaningful impact and has made an impact for the broader Lehigh Valley public? What do you think?
Well, it's hard not to say Do It For Dom with that drive of cancer awareness. You know, going back to some of the other jobs, though, you know, at Bridgman Strategic, we service the senior market as well. And that market is so, they're not highly represented sometimes and they're not protected. And sometimes they're taken advantage of. And to be able to help that market really is fulfilling in itself. But each one of my roles has pros to them that you really do appreciate every day that you get up and go to work.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. You know, so as you're talking, I'm thinking to myself, you know, you serve so many different roles, right? And I feel like that's more of a trend that we're seeing now amongst professionals and leaders for that matter. And I'm not sure if it's because, you know, there's just a need to kind of have a plan B or C or D in place, or if even, you know, maybe it lends itself to more flexible schedules, or maybe there's more demands on everybody's time at this point. And if you're a leader, you're expected to deliver more. But you've made some fairly big shifts in your career and pivots. You know, you launched media and consulting ventures. What were some of those challenges in making those pivots, and how did your prior experience prepare you for some of them, or maybe not prepare you for what you're facing now? And talk to us a little bit about those pivots and those multiple roles and how you balance and juggle all that.
Well, the pivot from hospitality banking to the bar, it really was easy for me in that I like to say it's the role that I finally grew up to be, because it brought all my past experiences together. Mm-hmm. Hospitality, event planning, customer service, you know, it brought all that together. And then the banking with the business banking, with the investments, with insurance, it brought everything together. And it was probably an easier transition than I expected. Mm. The more challenging ones were Network Magazine was a little bit of a challenge. When we started creating that, we were on the road trying to sell a concept. We didn't have anything to give anybody, and we were telling people, oh, this is going to be great. Just believe me. And that pivot was pretty hard. That first edition was challenging. We got in front of people going, hey, we're creating this networking experience with a magazine connected to it. And they're kind of looking at you like, what?
Especially in the world of like print media, you know, which can be so challenging in and of itself.
Oh, and they were telling us print's dead. What are you doing?
Yeah.
That helped having a good partner like Chris Morganelli, and we pounded pavements for a long time. That pivot was pretty hard, that first one. Everything's a challenge when you first do it, but I think you got to rely on your support, and then sometimes you got to grind. But that was a challenging pivot. That was kind of entertaining to see us in front of people going, I got nothing to show. I don't even think we had business cards. We're like, this is what's going
to
happen.
And we'll get to how you launched that in a second. But why different roles and why now?
You know, part of it is I always joke with people. I think leaders all have a little bit of ADD in them. Mm. Not that we don't concentrate, but we need a challenge a lot, I think. Mm-hmm.
And you're also revealing to yourself your best self, right? So being involved in multiple projects kind of puts you in the cat seat too for, you know, other roles. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, your bar association role may feed your network or vice versa, you know, the Network Magazine.
Yeah. And if you look at everything, well, particularly what I've tried to strategically plan, they kind of do feed each other.
Yeah.
You know, I need writers for Network Magazine. So I got, with the network we always have great attorneys, great realtors, financial advisors, bankers, mm-hmm. writing. With Bridgeman Strategic, you know, it allows all my different entities allow me to market Bridgeman Strategic and let the community know what we have to offer. So I shouldn't say it's a little bit of ADD, but it is, but
yeah,
it's a concentrated ADD strategy.
Right. That all kind of overlaps and intertwines together. All right. So tell us about the founding of Network Magazine, how that kind of launched, how the idea came about. What were your goals? What were some key lessons in building a magazine from scratch, you know, with little to no formal experience in publishing? How did that come about?
Well, that starts probably going back to 2012, maybe early 2013. I was thinking about this last night while prepping for this. When did me and Chris meet? And it was at an event, I think, at the Bar Association. Chris was out trying to network. His dad John Morganelli may have called me to say, hey, can you meet with my kid, this and that. You know, at the time he was a district attorney, now a judge, and you're not telling them no. you know, but we met. He was telling me what he was doing. And I said, well, you should get involved at the bar. It might help the business. And we kind of clicked from there. And then a couple years later, we started talking about trying to develop something together. I think we always knew we would, but it was what could we do? And it won't surprise anybody that knows me. We were having cocktails one afternoon with a few of us. I think we were at Cosmos or Hook, whatever, something downtown. And we sketched this idea out on a cocktail napkin, literally. And the first thing was we were trying to figure out a way, how do we brand ourselves? You know, what can we do to get the message out there? Networking. There were tons of, and there still are tons of networking groups, but what can we do? And somebody came up with the idea, well, let's put a magazine to it. And we're like, okay, how's that work? And we kind of started going from there. That's kind of how it started. And when I left the meeting, I thought, eh, is this really going to go?
Yeah.
And then it just took off, and we're now a decade plus into it. And, yeah, it's funny when you meet somebody like Chris, and you're like, okay, we complement each other. Like, there's something going to happen in the future. But it took a little while. But once we started, it took off.
Yeah. And so you have a great partnership with Chris. But let's talk a little bit about your Bridgman Strategic Concepts, RM Consulting. What are the joys and the unique challenges of being professional partners in entrepreneurship, particularly with your wife, finance and insurance? But also, you know, what key takeaways do you even have with the partnership you have built with Chris Morganelli? What are some partnership challenges and joys that kind of play into all of it?
Okay, now you're trying to get me in trouble. Okay. I think early on, when we were creating the company, Miriam had already had extensive experience in the market. And this was during COVID. So she came up with the idea. She goes, oh, let's open an office. And it's COVID. And I'm like, okay,
bold move.
Yeah.
Bold move.
But this, she wanted to have an office. This was her dream, to have our own office, to brand. So we looked around and we found it. And once we started working together, I quickly learned that just because you're a partner, you don't have to be an equal partner in drive, in responsibility. Sometimes as a leader, maybe it's good to take a step back, observe what's going on, and find out how you can support who's really the driving factor. And for us, Miriam's the driving factor for Bridgman Strategic Concepts. And for me to be able to just take on more of that business development role, and that's kind of how we structured that. You know, to have the expertise, especially in the Medicare market that she has, mm-hmm. to try to duplicate that. I'm not sure I could ever duplicate that expertise, that sometimes it's better just go get the business and drop it off and be. And I think when you're talking being in a business with a family member, especially a spouse, you kind of got to figure that out quick.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's face it, if it doesn't go well, it might not only ruin the business, it could ruin the relationship.
Way worse than the hospitality scenario.
Correct.
<right?
laughs> So you got to figure that out quick. And then once we knew our lanes, I think that's where things really started to roll.
Yeah.
And you respected what each other brought to the table. But then you got to be able to turn that. You got to be able to accept the fact when you come into the office, it's office. And when you leave, it's not office anymore. Mm-hmm. You got to be able to have those kind of things. And the same with Chris. When you have people you work with that complement each other, it makes it easier.
Mm-hmm.
It's harder when you have people you work with that you don't complement each other. A little piece of advice might be, you know, maybe don't put all your eggs in that basket, because mm-hmm. that's probably not going to end well.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. I can think of a lot of spouses that do work together that don't necessarily make a great team of it.
Yeah, and could make a rocky road at home.
Let's shift gears for a second. Your son, Dominic, he began the concept of Do It for Dom Focus Foundation from his hospital bed. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And yes. And you lost him in June 2021 of testicular cancer, was it?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Can you share how Dominic's vision came together, how that experience has shaped you personally, and how the foundation works to honor his legacy?
Sure. So going back to those strange days in COVID land, I remember it was probably late February 21. I was actually just catching up with Dominic at Tavern on Liberty, which was his second home. He was managing the kitchen there. And he just wasn't feeling good. And he's like, Dad, I don't know. You know, it's probably COVID. Everybody's had it twice now and flu, whatever. He's having stomach pains. And you know, 27-year-old kid's going to shrug it off, you know. I think the symptoms kind of got worse over the next couple of days. His mom probably forced him to go to the hospital, mm-hmm. get a check. I got a text that says, it looks like it's an ulcer. And I'm like, wow. Okay, 27. But, you know, hey. Worse things, you know. Mm-hmm. And then that quickly changed into text like, it looks like cancer and they're admitting him. And that's when things really went off the rails. So we're now in probably late March, early April. He's in for procedures and things like that. And again, during COVID, you know, there were only a certain amount of people allowed in a room at a time.
Right.
So we all had to take shifts. My shift was early morning. Okay, and then probably I snuck in at the end of the day and stayed after hours, and we'd sit there and watch ball games, and there'd be some online gambling or two or three or four. but that was my shift. And one morning before going up, I got a text from him that said, Dad, I know what I want to do. I want to work with families. I want to get them through this. And one thing I want to concentrate on is I want to get rid of the stigma that goes along with some of these diseases and ailments. Again, testicular cancer is what Dom's cancer was. And, you know, no 27-year-old guy is going to talk about that stuff with their families. Mm-hmm. Maybe they don't talk about it with their doctors. So that was a big concentration for him to work on that, to get people to go get early checkups and also raise money for charitable organizations and services. But his drive was the awareness. And I mean, when that text came in, I thought, all right, we'd be spending a day business strategy, trying to figure things out. For those that knew Dom, yeah, it won't surprise you that that meant he stayed up all night. He created a business plan. Mm-hmm. He created logos. Sorry to my attorney members out there. He used some online service and actually registered a company.
Wow.
He was ready to go. So, you know, when he started that, and then things rapidly changed after that, it was no-brainer for us to just take over what he created. And music was a huge part of his life. I don't quite understand it. He actually produced backbeats, whatever that means, and sold them on the internet. But it just made sense for us to incorporate music into something with that. And that's how the Music Fest came about.
And how would you say the organization or his plan that you're now carrying the legacy for, how has that mission, especially around early detection and supporting families or changing perception, how has that role or where, you know, what role has awareness played as part of it beyond raising funds?
Yeah. I mean, I think the awareness is the number one factor. And I say that because if Dom was here today, he'd tell you he ignored symptoms. He didn't go get checked. He would tell you that. After Dom's passing, I made a conscious effort to get on top of my own health. You know, I went and did the physicals and scheduled the procedures we all put off. I jokingly sat with my doctor and said, Doc, you can literally, I'll clean it up, get off my butt. I scheduled the colonoscopy. I'll go get it. I'm only 2 years late. He said, no, Ray. I was 52 at the time. He said, they changed that to 45. You're now 7 years late.
Oh, geez.
I'm like, ah, whatever. So I go, you know, they give you the night-night juice and you're out.
Yeah.
I remember bits and pieces after that, but I woke up probably late in the afternoon in ICU, a bag of blood hanging.
Oh,
I still don't know what, you know, still didn't know what was going on until Clarity came back and they were telling me, you know, we found a large polyp and what they do is they remove it to send it out for biopsy. Unfortunately, mine had a blood vessel going through it and caused some major issues. And, you know, there I am, ICU in the hospital, and you think, okay, you know, doctors are using some verbiage like, well, we don't like to say you were going around the drain a little bit, but you were close. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll survive this. And then you got to wait for that biopsy to come back. And it was a Friday afternoon, late afternoon, 6 o'clock. My UGI comes up on the phone, and I'm like, well, this can't be good. Who's calling at 6 o'clock? First thing he says, it's not cancer. And then he goes, I can't tell you it would have been cancer, but it would have been cancer. And, you know, we don't tell Dom's story. We don't tell my story to scare people to not get it. Remember, Dom would tell you he ignored things. I was 7 years late. I'm sure my outcome would have been a whole lot easier.
If it was earlier.
I mean, we were having this discussion the night before the last of Music Fest we had. And I said, I just don't know. You know, it's great to raise money. It's great to provide those donations. But are we really reaching anybody anymore? I got a phone call. Whether you want to say it's karma or whatever, I get a phone call from somebody. He goes, Ray, I got to tell you, apologize, we can't make it. But last year, what you talked about, Dom, yourself, I went and got checked. And he's like, today, I can tell you, I'm cancer free. So there you go.
Let's talk a little bit about legacy on that note.
You can't cry.
I already have. When you think about legacy, what do you want people to remember? What matters most to you? Is it the institutions you've built, the lives you've impacted, the awareness you've raised, or something else? And what advice would you give other leaders?
I don't know. I'm one of the ones that I don't really like the term legacy. Because I compare that to retirement. And I'm one of those crazy people. I don't know if I would ever 100% retire. When you love what you do, it kind of makes it easier. I'm not crazy. I would scale back. But as long as I love what I do, I don't know if I could ever retire. So to me, legacy, you just, you know, live your life today. It's going to figure itself out.
Yeah.
I just, you know, until there's a day where I don't enjoy what I'm doing, I don't know if I can think that route. Yeah. You know, I know people think legacy and they think, oh, what, I got to leave a legacy. But to me, you know, when you start talking legacy, you start thinking of retirement. And I'm like, I'm not ready for that.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Ray, thank you for your courage, your leadership, and for generously sharing your story. You've shown us how leadership is about the spaces we build, the people we serve, and the love we carry forward. To our listeners, if today's conversation moves you, I encourage you to explore Do It For Dom Focus Foundation. Support moments of advocacy, awareness, or compassion in your own communities. Reach out, connect, and heal. Ray's journey reminds us that from deep loss can come deep purpose, and that what we build personally and together shapes our legacy far more than we often realize. Thank you for joining us on Trailblazers. I'm Melody Bradford. Until next time, lead with intention, live with purpose, and carry hope forward.